And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Quest Youth Radio, better known as Quest Community Vibrations, but Quest Youth Radio is the best youth radio. You know, music is like poetry, and it has a message. And history like a diamond shines clear to the truth. Words have meanings that we can comprehend, like definition. News can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now, I'm asking you, the listenership, that's right, you, to pull back our musical curtain to see and hear the contributions of our diaspora, and you're sure to find our Quest moment where we attempt to make waves, indeed, vibration. So I thank you once again for joining us to hear a different perspective of our community. Now, this morning, our new student host, Justin Hill, has chosen his Diamond of the Week on Donald M. Payne, Sr., the first black elected to Congress from the New Jersey State. And for his definition segment, he will define the word account. Now, rounding out our curtain segment will be Michael Jackson. And he will be featured not only for his music, but also for his philanthropy. Now, without any further ado, hesitation, stumbling, or any of that nonsense, right, I like to say good morning to Justin. Good morning, Justin. How are you?
I'm good.
Well, I want to ask you to take it away and begin with your first segment of Diamonds.
Okay. So I am Justin Hill, and I will be doing my first segment on Donald M. Payne. History is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the source of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply and you are bound to find yourself. Donald is a masculine given name. He was born on July 16, 1934 in North New Jersey, and he died on March 6, 2012 in Livingston, New Jersey at the age of 77. The final D in Donald is partly derived from a myth interpretation of the Gaelic pronunciation by English speakers, and partly associated with the spelling of similar sounding Germanic names such as Ronald. A short form of Donald is Don. Thank you, and I am Justin Hill.
Okay. Justin, what we're going to do is bring in our panelists, and I think we have Tamir Davis. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Okay. You just heard Justin give a brief idea of who Donald M. Payne, and he actually looked in and examined the actual name, right? But tell us from your perspective, your experience and knowledge of the first black congressman from the state of New Jersey, Donald M. Payne.
First and foremost, it's an honor to talk about Donald M. Payne. Donald M. Payne was one of the most influential politicians in New Jersey, and what he had done in New Jersey and his fights he had done actually impacted upon the world. He held that post upon the leave of Peter Rodino, and He maintained it for quite some time. He also was involved in a lot of ongoing community events throughout the city of Newark. I understand that he also helped to develop what's called the International Youth Organization, IYO, which still stands today. And he's just been such a great politician. He's been involved heavily with a lot of interest in terms of the African diaspora. And I know that he's been leading the way in terms of changing the dynamics of New Jersey community, but also the impact of Africans throughout the whole entire planet. And there's a school named after Donald Payne, the Donald M. Payne Technology Center in the city of Newark. In fact, the Donald Payne, M. Payne Technology Center is one of the leading schools in the country right now in terms of its developments, in terms of arts, of science. So Donald Payne, I respect him. I met him a few times. He was very encouraging. He was the type of person that wouldn't be would speak to people. He was very down to earth, and he would always be encouraging to me and others. And everybody I spoke to have had great things to say about the late Congressman Donald M. Payne. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I would like to bring in Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris, your perspective from your memory of Congressman Payne.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
You know, Donald Payne, he was actually a classmate of my uncle, so I had I knew him before he became who he became. You know, and then when I was and like Tamir was saying, his impact touched a lot of areas outside of the city of Newark or the state of New Jersey. Because when I was in college down in Columbia, South Carolina, when Jim Clyburn was trying to be the first black congressman from South Carolina since Reconstruction, Donald Payne came down to our school to help register people, to help get people fired up about Jim Clyburn's candidacy and everything. And he was just that type of person that would reach out and was able to, if he was able to help anybody, he would. And a lot of times he did it without getting the recognition. He wasn't looking for recognition first. He was looking for getting something done in the community first. And then if you figured out that he was in it, then maybe you would, like, give him some praise. But he wasn't looking for personal accolades. He was the kind of guy that just wanted to get stuff done for our people in the whole diaspora, everywhere. So he was a great man.
Yeah, that is so true. Justin, I want to also tell you that the halls of Seton Hall University, he actually graduated from that school, and that is where we broadcast live every Saturday morning from. And so there's a tidbit of more information that hopefully if you paid attention, you probably picked up and now have learned about Donald M. Payne Sr., our first black congressman from the state of New Jersey. And right now, I'm going to move musically to the next song, which is by Michael Jackson. And somebody said something about Donald M. Payne, but I bet that he was always looking at the man in the mirror.
I'm gonna make a change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. And I turned up the collar on my favorite winter coat. This wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street, but not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see their needs?
haven't, make sure you do. Take a look at yourself in the mirror and find out who you are. You know, and I'm sure the panelists will agree, one of the hardest things that you can do in life is to know who you are. Sometimes we get so involved with so many other things, trying to know what everything else is, and we forget that the most important thing in life is to know thyself. And with that being said, I want to turn it back over to Mr. Justin Hill, our student host, and say good morning to you again, and it's time, let it loose, for your second segment of Definition.
Well, hello again. History is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply and you are bound to find yourself. A bank account is a financial account maintained by a bank or other financial institution in which the financial transactions between the bank and a customer are recorded. Each financial institution sets the terms and conditions for each type of account it offers, which is classified and commonly understood types, such as deposit accounts and minimal accounts. Thank you for listening again.
Okay. All right. So, Justin, just so you know, that would be the Black librarian, Mr. Tamir Davis, and Mr. Harris. We were talking about the two different meanings for the word account. And I had made it my business to tell Mr. Harris that I did not mention, right, that the word account can be used as a verb and a noun. And so I didn't mention that to you, Justin, but I did mention to you that this is all in the emphasis to educate our audience about financial literacy. And it seems like you have stayed the course and chose the right definition for the word account. Now, I'm going to come straight to Mr. Harris. And, Mr. Harris, what's your take on the definition of the week and Justin's choice?
First, let me say that account, you know, like you said, is a verb and a noun. And sometimes we have to take account to our own financial literacy. And I remember when I was a little kid, they had bank accounts for kids in school in first and second grade at the Howard Bank downtown North. You used to put in a quarter. They taught you how to use your what a debit and a credit was. You had to fill out your little bank book. All of those things teaches you at a foundation level of what it is to be able to see how money works and how you can use it to your benefit. Because they had this thing where we might have had some lost money. And so I said, let me just put my thing in there. They found my old Howard Bank account, and it had matured over the many years, and it was like almost $1,000 from the little quarters and nickels I used to put in every week that my family could afford. So sometimes it's good to understand that money grows, and if you choose to save it, you can choose to have some better things in your life. And I'm glad Justin brought that up. That's a good word for everybody to know.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comment and input on that particular word. I want to bring in the Black librarian. You know, Mr. Harris mentioned something that was important, and there was a time period where in education, children were taught the meaning of what a savings account was. And it wasn't hard to grasp the whole concept. You take a little money, you put it in the bank, right, and that money's in the bank with your name on it. And during that same period of time, Mr. Davis, I want to bring it to your attention during that same period of time, and Mr. Harris, you can come back in here if you want to, that same period of time, there was an emphasis on the skills trade in education as well. During that time, you can go to school, and in elementary school, you can learn in elementary school. I'm saying it twice because it was so nice. It was so important. You can learn carpentry. You can learn home economics, how to cook and sew. And those things were being taught on an elementary school level. And at that time, during that savings, that whole period, there was so much, so many dynamic things going on in education, right? And so, Mr. Davis, what happened? Let's take an account.
I think that
it's an unfair question.
What I think is that if you go back to the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and what have you, you didn't necessarily, 70s, you know, on a, you didn't necessarily need to have a college education to be a person that was working in the professional area. And so there was a need for, and then we can go as far back as the harvest period in the South, whereby students would learn how to grow crops, how to properly plant crops. And even the whole school system was built around the harvest period, whereby students were let out of school during those particular periods between May and August, particularly in the South, to be able to cultivate and build crops. And they had to learn that skill set because it was a very important aspect of economics. It was a very important aspect of growing your family's future. And so most instances, in addition to learning the basic arithmetic, the basic of English grammar, writing, so on and so forth, you also had to learn how to engage in growing cash crops because it was a very important part of the economy, a very important part of putting money in your family savings or what have you. And so just like you have all these other professions that exist with technology and so on, during that time, to be able to have an eighth grade education was splendid. If you went to high school, it was okay. And so you had to learn how to engage in basic banking. You had to learn how to engage in, you know, savings and so on and so forth. I think what happened is that it changed tremendously in terms of people having to go to college and learn how to do accounting, be in accounts and so on and so forth. But you learn all those, you should be able to learn basic savings and how to negotiate your accounts and put monies in the account by your family, by your parents, so on and so forth, stuff like that. But it's not being taught the same way. I would say the average child in the new immediate area do not have a savings account. They don't have, they may not have a annuity account. And so just like knowing the term and definition of an account, whether it's a savings and or checking account, I think is also important for the student to know that when you put your money in the account, when you deposit money in the account, when you actually put a check in, or if you're transferring money, is it also important to know whether or not it was properly negotiated, whether or not if you're spending money or you're going to the store, you want to make sure that you recheck your account, and if you spent $25, that those $25 was spent, and that you want to know the balance in the account. So it's not just important to know what the account is, but it's also important to know how the account is negotiated, whether or not there's money still in the account, whether or not you're in the negative in terms of your account. But I think the change in dynamics of society changed the expectations of the educational arena. But those basic things of having a savings account and what have you, those things usually are passed down from the parents down to the child. And you don't necessarily have to go to school to learn that.
Okay.
Thank you.
So yeah, thank you, Mr. Davis. Thank you so much for tackling that question, which was like off the wall, like Michael Jackson. But, you know, we have to think in terms. You know, I'm coming back to Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris, I want to remind you that we are on the podcast. And that being said, I want you to pull out both barrels. And whatever happened to the responsibility of the household to, you know, teach the basic things that children need to know before they even head off? Why is school being held so responsible for so many things that the family should be held responsible for? Let it go, Mr. Harris.
That's kind of a deep perspective. You know, but so you have to really understand that over the last, say, 50 years, America went from being a producer country to being a consumer country. And over that time, a lot of people, like you were saying before, the people that were in tech schools, all the technical schools were mainly for carpentry, were mainly for electronics, you know, plumbing. And kids could be 18 years old and come out with a plumber's license, with a carpenter's license, with electronics license, and be able to take care of their work. But then we started exporting a lot of our actual physical work to other countries to save money. It wasn't that the product that we were making here was inferior in any way. It's just that the business owners felt like, if I can make more money by sending this same job to Taiwan or sending it to Mexico, and, you know, or I can pay the people a small percentage of what I have to pay people in America. And this is why a lot of those businesses and those skills were stopped being taught in school, because there wasn't a lot of jobs to be able to. They got rid of the steel industry. They got rid of the electronic stuff. Mainly, almost all of our stuff is made over on the Eastern Rim, over there between China and Japan and Taiwan and Hong Kong. This is where all our electronics and stuff are made. We hardly, if ever, make any electronics here in America, because financially it's better for the people who are actually owning the companies, who really look to their own stakeholders, and they have really nothing, you know, their workers aren't as important as their stakeholders, let me put it like that. You know, and this is why a lot of this stuff's been taken out of school. And, you know, there was also a civil rights reason for taking some of that stuff out of school, because a lot of people like Dr. King and people like that, they were being financed by black families who were working in the automobile industry, that were carpenters and stuff like that. They were giving donations and stuff to help him be able to do what he did. And that's why a lot of the factories and stuff, you know, they used to all be in the inner cities at one time. And then they got them out of the inner cities, because that's where a lot of the financial background for the civil rights movement was coming from. So the powers that be kind of like things the way they are, so they're not going to do anything to really change that. And, you know, if they see that we're moving in the wrong direction as far as they're concerned, they'll change everything into their, you know, into their line, so that they can always have the lion's share of things that's going on. And it's something that, like we were saying, it has to be taught at home. And if they don't do it at home, most of the time they won't get it. Some families don't do it at home because they haven't been taught. And we're going back a couple generations. If your grandmother didn't teach your mother, then you're not going to know. And we do these things on purpose, and we fall into the same traps every time, not just here in America, but all over the world. We're falling into the same traps again and again. All right, you got to stop me, man.
Okay, well, you're stopped, and I'm going to interject with another Michael Jackson tune titled Remember the Time.
Young again and innocent. Do you remember? all began. It just seems like heaven, so I did it. Do you remember back in the fall? Then we sit again.
Definitely brings me back. It's one of my favorite Michael Jackson tunes. But I need to tell everybody out there that it's time for another Aesop Fable. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, panelists on the podcast and discussion, I want you to pay close attention because this is going to be an easy one for each and every one of you to figure out. But more importantly, when I say ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and more importantly, more exclusively, more specifically, you adults out there, I need you to always pay attention to tapping in to the child inside of you. And that being said, it's most important to always realize that you're never too old to learn. Today's fable is titled The Four Oxen and the Lion. It seems that a lion used to prowl about a field in which four oxen used to dwell. Now, many a time, he tried to attack them, but whenever he came near, they turned their tails to another. And so that whichever way he approached them, he was always met with the horns of one of them. So at last, however, they fell into a quarrel, an argument amongst themselves, and each went off to pasture alone. in a separate corner of the field. Now, the lion attacked them one by one and soon made an end of all four. And so, I come straight to Justin. Justin, what do you think the moral of this particular story is? And you are allowed to say, I don't know.
I think the moral of the story is that you like to get into an argument or like anything.
You have to come closer to the phone because I can't hear you.
I think the moral of the story is that you can't fight. You can't like argue about something. Or, like you can't argue about anything.
Okay.
I'm going to go to Tanisha. Tanisha, good morning, first of all. And I'm going to get you to chime in on a lot of other things. But first of all, what do you think the moral of that particular fable was?
I'm still trying to figure it out. I guess the last part I got, because you said that he got them all. So I guess
The lion ate every single one of them after they argued.
Yeah, so I'll say, I guess be strategic and wait your time to shine, because you're going to shine, I guess. That's what I got from it.
Okay. Mr. Tamir Davis, the black librarian, I know you like to knock the ball out of the ballpark, but, hey, you never know. You might be stumped today. What do you think the lesson of this particular fable was?
I think I may be stumped today.
Go ahead. I'll give you a try. You get a chance to say something before I go to Mr. Harris.
Now, you said that you mentioned that the lion had seek retribution on each and every one that trespassed in any way.
Okay. So let me just run it back to everybody one more time. The oxen always stayed together, and the lion always tried to, you know, eat them. He used to come to, you know, oh, yeah, I know some food over there, right? And so every time the lion came, they stood back-to-back and fought off the lion with their horns. Well, the oxen had an argument amongst themselves, and they all split and did their own thing. And as a result, the lion just picked one of them off one at a time.
That was a smart thing for the lion to do. What happened is, the moral of the story is, as long as we stay unified as a team, then nothing can penetrate. But once we actually divide amongst ourselves, because the bulls act as a body, a collective body, to make sure that nothing can penetrate. But he actually saw that there was dissension amongst them, and he was able to actually demolish them one by one, which was a smart thing for the lion to do because he couldn't beat them as a collective. But he had to wait until there was the great opportunity of weakness amongst them to seek and slaughter each one by one. Divide and conquer.
Yeah. Mr. Harris.
Yo, I think the nail has just been hit on the head with the as long as we stick together as a unified force, it's hard for anybody to do anything negative against us. But when we fight amongst ourselves, we got to learn how to keep that amongst ourselves. And when we go out in public, always have a united front. And this way we can be able to move in areas where we weren't able to move before. So to me, I said it is power and unity.
Right. And so just so everybody knows, what's written is united we stand, divided we fall. And I think everybody on the panel, you can figure out why Mr. Bay chose this particular fable, because as long as we remain a united team, we will not be defeated. We will never fall. Okay. Well, that being said, I want to also say to anybody out there, right, that might be suffering from drug abuse, a drug dependency of any form, or might be suffering from depression or mental illness, or just somebody to talk to. You know, the fact is, during the pandemic, the whole idea of mental illness and depression has gone up exponentially, and we all have to cling to one another to get help. But if for some reason you don't have someone that you can talk to, you can dial 1-800. This is a national hotline with a counselor on the end 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. 1-800-662-4357. That's 1-800-662-4357. 1-800-662-HELP 4357 for help. And so, that being said, I'd like for us to continue on. The time now is about 15 minutes left to our show. I'd like for Justin to get prepared for his segment for Curtains as I prepare the introduction. Curtains is an exposure and analysis of the work behind the curtains of the stage. You see, ladies and gentlemen, many recording artists and companies have grown rich from the support of the community. But what benefits has the community gained from the artists is the question that we ask in this particular segment. Curtains is a review of the musical growth and history and impact of a particular style and genius on the general moods and attitudes of the listening audience. It is musical and lyrical and social consciousness as presented by the artists over a period of time and CD release. Curtains serves best as an introduction to and an exploration of a particular artist's, and this morning, his genius and his involvement in influencing all people's style and creativity in the world today. And I must add that Justin, you've definitely chosen someone who is a global global generous artist as your curtain this morning, okay? Take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Kay. Michael Jackson began performing with his wife, with his group, with his brother, and created a pop group called the Jackson 5 when he was just a child. When by the age of 11, Jackson was appearing on TV, and by the age of 14, he had released his first album with his brother, and it was called
I'm going to drop the phone call about 12 o'clock, and then on my way back, I'll be able to get everything you need to get, because I'm going to Aldi's anyway.
Michael and his brothers released a song called ABC, and I'll Be There. When Jackson grew up, he released a song called Thriller in 1983, and it became the biggest selling album up to that time.
Thank you.
good morning, Tanisha. Again, now today we had the pleasure to talk about the benevolence of Michael Jackson, who we just got finished listening to, and the generosity that he expressed as a global figure with his dance and music and his songwriting abilities. He stretched across the entire globe. There's no one on the planet who cannot say they never heard of Michael Jackson. On the other hand, we spoke about the Congressional Black Caucus and member and the first black congressman from the state of New Jersey who took over from Peter Rodino from the city of Newark, once a councilman here in the city, but a man of the people who walked amongst the streets, not here just in New Jersey and Newark, but around in Africa as well. A balance sheet, a ledger, a statement, a report, a definitely account of today's show. Tanisha, tell us what you think about today's podcast / broadcast.
Today was a good show. I learned a lot, and I learn everything every day. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And the Black Librarian, besides you going to Aldi's after you get off, right, you had the pleasure of expressing that to us all here. What did you think about today's therapy? I mean,
it was a great show. Now the whole world know who rules the house.
No, actually the whole world knows who's going to the store, okay?
Okay.
What do you think about today's broadcast?
Great show.
Okay. All right. I think I embarrassed him. Mr. Harris, what did you think about today's show?
That was a good embarrassment. I keep my thing on.
That's right. Your mic is still on. Okay, Mr. Harris.
Well, you know, today is always, there's always new information that, you know, I kind of knew a little bit about Donald Payne a little bit. I knew a little bit about Michael Jackson. But, you know, the perspective on looking at accounting and stuff, it is something that needs to be a household word and something that we just don't put all the onus on educators to be able to show your kids so that they can have a better future. It's up to the family to build that kind of rapport with you, with their own, to bring that to the light, you know. But I just remember just a quick word about Michael Jackson. You know, everybody talks about how hard they were back in the day, or he was in this gang or whatever gang. But Michael Jackson would have the hardest gang member trying to do the moonwalk, wearing that little funny-looking red jacket, putting gloves and stuff on. You know, Mike had that kind of influence over everybody from every level of society. And that was a very powerful thing. And then when he started speaking out, then that's when he started running into some problems, when he started speaking out for the community. You know, but that's another whole segment by itself. But it's a great show, and we need to keep this type of stuff up.
Okay. And indeed we will, as a united force and never divided. Justin, I'm looking for you to close us out before I play the last song, before we box it up. Give us the station ID and close it out.
Okay. We are Crestwick Radio on WSOU HD 89.5 FM. Got it?
And Quest Youth Radio is, everybody, the best
youth radio.
Thank you, everyone, for your participation. All right. It's all good. Number of love. The sound of Michael Jackson.
Come on.
Never felt so good.